Okay, now the topic for these, for the first section, section C, was very obvious. The six Vedas, or pushings. Vacho Vegam, Manasakroda Vegam, Jiva Vegam, Udaropasta Vegam. What does Udaropasta Vegam mean?
Too much spaghetti.
Belly.
Not spaghetti, pasta.
You got you on a technicality.
My impression is spaghetti.
Spaghetti is included within the category of pasta for sure. I mean, without Samaveda here, we cannot confirm this completely. But. So, the belly and genitals. Jiva means tongue. Vacho vegam.
That's to speak.
Speak. Manasa krodha vegam.
Mind and anger.
Okay, and vegam means pushing. What is Etan Vegan? You don't know what that means?
These urges.
These urges or these pushings. Etan Vegan Yo Vishaheta Dira. Yo Vishaheta Dira. What does Vishaheta mean?
Tolerate.
Who can tolerate this is Dira. He is sober. And such a person, sarvam api mam, api imam. Sarvam means sarvam api mam prithivim nasishya. Who can explain what that means?
Sarvam is all. So all of this prithivi world, shisha didn't have the
sense. Right. And that api is for emphasis. Certainly, he's certainly qualified to make disciples. Now, in the verse earlier, the first point that was made that we discussed yesterday was that what is the way of the true way of removing the tendency to sin from within the heart of the individual. So, the process of atonement, what is the Sanskrit word for the process of atonement? Yes.
Prayaschitta.
Atonement. The process of atonement is compared to the bathing of an elephant. And how that doesn't it doesn't really remove the sinning tendency, because the tendency of the elephant, as soon as he gets out of bathing, he starts spreading dirt all over his body again. So that tendency to sin and then try to atone and sin and atone and sin is atoned, in Krishna consciousness it is the seventh offense. Namno baladyasya hi papabhuti Navidite tasya yamayar hi shuddhi. Shuddhi means purified. Yama means in the court of Yamaraj. A person who commits sins on the strength of his chanting, thinking that of course I'm doing something wrong, but by chanting, this will be my prayaschitta or atonement for removing the reaction to that sin. Such a person cannot even be purified because this offense is so great, even by going to the court of Yamaraj. Yamarahishuddhi. Navidyate tasya Yamarahishuddhi. He cannot be purified even by being sent to the court of Yamaraj. This offense is so great. So this is prayaschitta. That does not stop one from sinning, because it does not go deep enough. It does not remove that tendency from the heart. So the real prayaschitta, Prabhupada explains at the bottom of three, is awakening of our dormant Krishna consciousness. Real atonement, in the next line, involves coming to real knowledge. So coming to real knowledge is practically equated with coming to Krishna consciousness. Knowledge means basically jnana, knowing that we are not our body, but rather we are spirit soul. Then when that jnana matures or becomes realized more as to what is the quality or activity of the spirit soul, and who must that soul serve, because the nature of the soul, the dharma, the swadharma of the soul, that which cannot be separated from the soul, is service. No one can avoid. It is impossible to avoid serving. So when that jiva soul comes to the platform of real knowledge, which is actually beyond all, that by performing one's duty, one comes to the platform, one removes all sin. By performing his duty properly, yatta pravitabhutanam yena savamedam sutam, that by worship of the Lord, every man can come to perfection and thus become free from sin. And then, one is free from sin, one comes to the topmost knowledge. And that is on the Brahma-Bhuta platform. And then based on that, on the Brahma-Bhuta platform, nasochati nakamshati samasaveshu bhuteshu madbhaktim labhate param. Then based on that platform, one can render service. So this is the topmost knowledge, and this is the platform of Krishna consciousness, and this is the platform where there are no more sinful desires left within the heart. Then, some points that we didn't mention yesterday, that there are two processes, but it's written in the verse, in the Prabhupada's purport, there are two processes of coming to knowledge. One is the gradual process, of sakama bhakti, and then nishkama bhakti, and then coming to knowledge. And there are so many practices that are mentioned here, through controlling the senses, punya, always being truthful, giving in charity, controlling the mind, asan, so many pious, practical activities that one can gradually elevate himself to the platform of real knowledge. But there is a quick way to come higher, right to the platform of Krishna consciousness. And what is the key factor? And this comes out very clearly when we study the first six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita in the overview. What is the key factor?
They all lead to
Krishna. Right. The factor that makes one immediately, regardless of what position one is in practicing, there's one factor that makes all the difference, that can bring one immediately to the process of Krishna consciousness. Go on. It's actually more directly expressed, it's association. So therefore, saru sangha, sarva shastra koi, lava matra saru sange sava siddhi hoy. That just by a moment's hearing from a pure devotee, that jump can be made from this gradual process right to pure devotee, the practices of pure devotional service based on shravana and pure conditioning. So Prabhupada explains this, that under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master. So but right before that, however, if one is fortunate enough to get the association of a pure devotee, he can easily surpass all the practices for controlling the mind by the mystic yoga process, simply by following the regular principles of Krishna consciousness, etc., serving the spiritual master, coming to the platform of Bhajana Kriya, just by the powerful association of a pure devotee. So this is the process that Rupa Goswami is recommending. So this is the process of coming to knowledge, this is the process of coming to Krishna consciousness, this is the process of removing the sinful desire seed from the core of our heart. Now we will begin with today's section, two sections. Now, these two sections, or the first section, just describes the process more clearly. All these six vegan, what does vegans mean again?
Pushings
or urges. These pushings, how to control them, how to control these, how do you say tolerate? What is the sexual word used in the verse for tolerate?
Vishaheta.
Tolerate them being used in sense gratification. Now the first one is vacho vegam. Here's the process now that's going to be explained to come to the point of knowledge. First, one must control his speaking power. Every one of us has the power of speech. As soon as we get an opportunity, we begin to speak. If we do not speak about Krishna consciousness, we speak about all sorts of nonsense. A toad in a field speaks by croaking. And similarly, everyone who has a tongue wants to speak, even if all he has to say is nonsense. And it's just a fact that everyone is always wanting to talk, even if everyone else is going to say the same thing. Everyone wants to be the one who says it. That's the tendency, because we have the urge to speak. And this is disastrous if we're not speaking about Krishna. And that example of the toad, because the croaking of the toad simply invites the black snake of death to come closer. Because what's happening? The frog is croaking, and the snake in the dark doesn't know where the frog is. He can't see him. But by the sound of the croaking, gradually he comes closer and closer and closer until gobbles him up with one bite. So similarly, we just become closer to death. Our life is measured in breaths, and our breaths are wasted in this way, by wasting our time and our energy speaking not about Krishna. And it's so dull and it's so dry. But this point is explained later, how to overcome that in a later verse, by constantly hearing, and we get the higher taste. So the croaking of the toad simply invites the snake, please come here and eat me. So we may think we're saying so many wonderful things if we're not talking about Krishna, but all we're saying is, death, come and take me. I'm not interested in spiritual life. Come and kill me. That's practically the translation of the words, no matter what they are, that are not Krishna conscious. The tongue. So one alternative, so there are three different things given here. One is for the tongue. One is, you can speak nonsense, and the result of that is death. Or you could not say anything. What's that called?
Mona.
Right. But although Mona is very interesting, it's not practical. No one can do it. And you see, sometimes you see sadhus walking down the road in Vrindavan, and they have a little blackboard in their hand or a piece of paper. You've seen that? So they've taken a vrat or a vow of Mona. They write something down and show you. And then there was a famous example of the Prabhupada said about Maya Baba. Many, many years ago, he was, I don't know what happened to him, I guess he died quite a few years ago, but he hadn't spoken 15 years, and I think Prabhupada's comment was that it's better, because these Mayavadis, they have nothing to say. They should meditate and they should be silent. They cause less trouble that way. But when you have nothing to say, it's better to be silent. But, and the Mayavadis say another thing, the full pot does not, what is it called? Anyone ever hear that one? The full pot makes no sound. When one is actually full of knowledge, no sound emanates, because Brahman is that thing from by which where which words cannot enter. They simply return from that place. And as soon as you try to describe it, you are giving it mundane material conceptions. Therefore, but that does not work, because even though you might not be speaking with your tongue, you're speaking with your mind and writing something down, etc. So ultimately, it proves a failure because the tongue needs activity. So the third alternative is to speak not at all about material, but speak about the spiritual, and that is describing Krishna, name, form, qualities, pastimes of the Lord. And the preacher of Krishna consciousness is thus beyond the clutches of death. So before one can speak, one has to hear. If we don't hear about Krishna, what is the chance of us speaking about Krishna? So therefore, this is the whole process is based on shravana. And then after shravana, hearing, comes kirtanam, speaking, glorifying. So there's vacho vegam. Now the next is manasa vegam. Anyone like to give some points on manasa vegam?
Yeah, well, that's pushing in the mind, and the mind is controlled by always thinking of how to serve Krishna. Putting Krishna in the mind is like putting the sun in the sky and all the darkness is dissipated. Krishna Sri Sama.
Now there's something interesting on this point in that's described in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Nectar Devotion, also described in the Bhagavatam, that there are two examples given of people who put Krishna in their mind fully but are not accepted as Krishna conscious. Does anyone know who those examples are? One example and the other? No, yes. Shishupal. One out of envy and one out of fear. No, joking. Who is joking?
He was joking.
Who?
Joking.
Who?
Oh,
he was insulting.
Insulting
him. Because Krishna had taken a vow not to kill him. He said he would tolerate 1,000 insults from this Sisupal, who was his cousin brother. So he was envious of Krishna. And Kamsa was always fearful of Krishna. And actually, the intensity of remembrance of someone, when you're envious of someone or afraid of someone, is greater than the positive, actually. But it's still not considered devotional service, because this manasa vegam, or the mind can be controlled by focusing it on Krishna, is only good when it is anukul. Anyone know the meaning of anukul? Favorable. So the thoughts must be favorable about Krishna, not like Kamsa or Shishupal. Like, I'm going to kill Krishna, I'm going to insult Krishna. Yeah.
Isn't that the true statement this morning, that envy cannot be dovetailed with devotional service?
Yes.
What about the gopis? They
Have no envy.
Don't they have envy for each other sometimes?
Not really, because the test of real envy or not is given is when they found that they were sad that Krishna had taken Srimati Radharani alone, but when they saw that she was also in trouble, were they happy or were they sad? They immediately felt sorry for her. So that means it wasn't really envy, it was transcendental. When you're envious of someone, when they finally get it, ha ha ha, if I could have been there to see the blood. He deserved worse. That's envy. But when you see something bad has happened to a person, something like envy. That's like Srimati Radharani had what's called man with Krishna. And this is transcendental ecstasy. But it's like jealous, prideful anger. But it's not jealous, prideful anger. It's like it. So sometimes the actions of the gopis may appear to be envious, but it's not, because it's missing the basic quality of wishing harm to the other. Like anger, you're angry at someone, you want to get, and you can use that in Krishna service. But envy, the quality of wishing ill for others, cannot exist with the devotee.
I was just going to say, I remember reading the Nectar of Devotion, saying something about envy, and what you just mentioned there. There's a little subheading, envy, mentioning all these different.
Because envy springs. So anger is there in the spiritual world, but there, envy means envy and enviousness of Krishna. And how could you want to be in the spiritual world if he's envious of Krishna?
Maharaj Dandaya was explaining.
Right?
You would try to put down others in order to enjoy more. This envy. You put down others.
Yeah.
You put down God and everybody. Just make you superior. Just make you enjoy more.
There's two ways to become superior. One is to rise above everyone, and the other is to push everyone down. So naturally. So the envious person, of course, attempts to decry everyone as if that will make him better than he is. Okay, that's manasavegam. Then, after manasavegam, krodavegam. Anger can be controlled. We cannot stop anger altogether. But if we simply become angry with those who blaspheme the Lord or the devotees of the Lord, we can control anger in Krishna consciousness. So then the example is given of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who preached Srinada Pisa Nichena, Turoda Pisa Yusnina, but he would not tolerate anger. He got angry when who? When Jagai and Madhai struck Nityananda. Then, yeah.
On this one, it's clear that you become angry if, say, a non-devotee or something is blaspheming Krishna or Krishna's devotees. And how about if sometimes, like in the association of devotees, some devotee is kind of blaspheming another devotee? And, you know, you want to get angry, or is it here problem with that, like fire? It would also. At the same time,
yes.
they're devotee of sorts, you know.
See, there's different. It's not real, because that's the first offense. Satam nindam namna. How does it go? Satam nindam namna. Namo aparad bitanute itakyatam itakatim. Anyway. This ninda means blasphemy. So sometimes devotees speak like that, a little bit critical, but their heart isn't really, you know, they're not deeply, they're not envious, they're just, this guy, blah, 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 blah. But actually, devotees are, you know, they don't really deeply hate the person like that. So it's really different than if someone really has enmity. I saw it even with when the so-called guru wars were going on, you know, with the Zonal Acharyas and things. I saw some of the devotees, you know, they were criticizing and, you know, fighting. But soon it was over. But other people I saw with a deep enmity that wanted to hurt the other person. And I'm thinking of one person in particular, and he and me, he didn't survive, even though he was so-called on the winning side, because it was ninda. So, if someone is blasphemous, someone who's a devotee, is blasphemous deeply of another devotee, it should be treated in the same way. One shouldn't tolerate it. But the other way, you know, we don't tolerate it anyway. You know, someone just being, you know, their mouth is running a bit. It's not nice to hear, but it doesn't strike the heart in the same way. Because in the society of devotees, there's a lot of devotees who can't digest their lunch without a little politics.
Especially in a place like when you're in Vrindavan, you know, can't take it out on the non-devotees.
You're angry.
Yeah, you know, studying this well at the same time, you know, if someone gives it a hard time, you can release it a little bit. But here, you can't, there's all devotees everywhere in the
term. That's why this is not the place for anger.
Isn't it that the gopis are always like bitter quarrels with each other?
Well, there's different groups of gopis. There's right-wing gopis and left-wing gopis, and they're fighting. There's no doubt about that. But when Krishna left Vrindavan, Srimati Radharani and Chandravali were very good friends. When Krishna was there, so Srimati Radharani felt very much, because they were suffering together. After Krishna left, this is in Lalita Madhava. So they were sisters, actually. Goswami describes. But they were fighting otherwise. But it's devoid of the quality of true enmity, because actually all the gopis are expansions of Srimati Radharani and Krishna's pleasure potency. So how is there true fighting and anger at each other? Expansions of the pleasure potency.
So, well, two things. That analysis that you just gave about devotees criticizing or blaspheming is on different levels. You know, mostly it's just sort of like this guy, right? The way you find devotee, as compared to, you know, really hateful. But now that's I presume that that's the way that we should train our minds to think of other people's, you know, slight blasphemies,
say. Right, exactly.
But for ourselves, it would seem that we should try to avoid, you know, we shouldn't, it might seem inappropriate to write them off that easily, you know.
But if one is preaching, one can't avoid little criticisms, and if one is managing, one can't avoid these things. You just can't avoid it. But one should be careful, and one especially shouldn't allow envy to enter his heart about devotees and wish them ill.
So then it becomes a service, you have to make some distinctions between seeing these two.
Yeah. You have to. Unavoidable. So then we get to jiva on page 6. The tongue and its palatable dishes. Now there's some interesting points in here. We should not allow the tongue to eat according to its choice, but should control the tongue by supplying prasad. The devotee's attitude is that he will eat only when Krishna gives him prasad. That is the way to control the urge of the tongue. One should take prasad at scheduled times and should not eat at restaurants or sweetmeat shops simply to satisfy the whims of the tongue or belly. If we stick to the principle of taking only prasad, the urges of the belly and tongue can be controlled. So Prabhupada has put Uda Upasta.
together here. The jiva and the udara, the tongue and belly. So if one just vows to eat only prasadam, then so much of the problem of the control of the tongue is taken care of. If one thinks that being a vegetarian is simply enough, then one is making a mistake, a great mistake. Any comments or questions? But prasadam should be palatable and nice. It's not fair to do that to the devotees or Krishna, to say you can only eat prasadam and then the prasadam isn't nice. Prabhupada, he was a connoisseur of prasadam. Prasadam should be nice. It's got to be offered to Krishna. Should be nice. How could one offer with devotion? Patram pushpam palam toyam yomam bhakta taraham bhakti paridam asnami. Asnami means I will take it, I will accept it. So Krishna accepts when it's offered with devotion. So how could it be offered with devotion to someone that one loves unless it's a very delectable presentation? Okay. In a similar manner, the urges of the genitals, the sex impulse, can be controlled when not used unnecessarily. The genitals should be used to beget a Krishna conscious child, otherwise they should not be used. The Krishna conscious movement encourages marriage not for the satisfaction of the genitals, but for the begetting of Krishna conscious children. As soon as the children are a little grown up, they are sent to our Gurukula school in Dallas, Texas. This is an old version. When they are trained up to become fully conscious of Krishna conscious devotees. Many such Krishna conscious children are required, and one who is capable of bringing forth Krishna conscious offspring is allowed to utilize his genitals. And then, when one is fully practiced in the methods of Krishna conscious control, these six, then one can become qualified, one is qualified as a bona fide spiritual master. So that Prabhupada briefly explained all the different vegans there and how to control them. And we should know these practically and theoretically, how to control them. We should have a deep understanding. Now, the next section goes back to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati's Thakur's analysis from his Anuvritti of Vacho, Vegam, Manasa, and Vadi. The urge to speak, the urges of the mind, and the demands of the body. And when one surrenders to these three, says whatever he wants, lets the mind wander everywhere, or lets his body or senses do whatever he wants, then one's life is doomed. He's completely controlled by the external energy of the Lord. So, then it goes over again. And this first section is speech again. Vacho Vegam, according to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So, useless talking is that of the Mayavadis, or of the fruit of workers, or materialistic people who want to enjoy their life. All these talks are useless. Why? Because they do not cultivate within our heart love of Krishna. A devotee who's serious goes immediately, as quickly as the wind, to a place where he can enhance his love of Krishna. And he avoids scrupulously, inscrutably avoids places or hearing or speaking those things which do not develop this love of Krishna. He's serious about using his life. So Prabhupada then starts, and a contrast is made between two different types of literatures. those the literatures of the crows and the literatures of the swans. And those swans, the literature of the swans, is the literature which is full of descriptions of the transcendental glories of the name, fame, forms, pastimes of the unlimited Supreme Lord, is a different creation, full of transcendental words directed towards bringing about a revolution in the impious lives of this world's misdirected civilization. Such transcendental literatures, even though imperfectly composed, are heard, sung, and accepted by purified men who are thoroughly honest. So the conclusion, Prabhupada explains, is that only when we talk about devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead can we refrain from useless, nonsensical talk. We should always endeavor to use our speaking power solely for the purpose of realizing Krishna consciousness. Okay, for tomorrow, we'll finish this verse. So do sections E and F. That's from page 9 to the top of page 14, or halfway through 14. Are there any comments, any special appreciations from here? Any questions, any practical realizations, anything like that? Yeah.
What struck me is in the preface that Prabhupada compares, as Lord Chaitanya left 8 verses known as Shukshastika, the Rupa Goswami gave us a Purushamrita. As vital as the Shukshastika is for the devotees chanting on Krishna, then these verses should be as vital in prosecuting devotional service and daily life that Krishna has some essential.
Nice. Any other points? Ideas? I'd like to hear how everyone's finding the reading, and they're summarizing as they're going along. Maybe we could hear a few of the summaries. Yeah.
I was just going to say that maybe maybe when none of us on the leaves, and there's, you know, there's less classes and less work, we might be able to do some more. Find that.
Do some more, meaning?
Well, read more rather than just reading
just a little bit.
Two pages more. It's nice to read me a half a book or something to get more of a feel. Because at the moment it's just like a couple of points.
But still, the reason why, we'll see gradually how much is appropriate, but so far, it's taken the whole period to cover what we read. If we keep an hour class, those 15 minutes is, so far it's been like that, 15 minutes it takes to chant the slokas. But today I spent almost 15 minutes catching up, I mean just going over the flow of the verses, so we won't be doing that every day. And also we want to spend a little time making sure that the Sanskrit and the word meanings stick in our mind too. But I think we should cover in the class, the writing, or the reading rather, should be enough, just enough to cover everything in the class, and not so we have to rush in the class. Because if there, we want to also have discussion. You know, I'd like to also hear whatever realizations the devotees get from reading. But your point, as I understood it, was that we should make sure we're catching the flow of the verse and purport. Yeah.
I guess that would happen when you reach the end, you know, you love it.
Yeah, we should do that. That's a good point. Now, as it turns out, this text has 6. We'll take 2 days, 3 days. We'll do one more day and we'll complete it. Then the next one is 2 days. So I think most of the rest are 2 days. It'll probably be a little bit more. I don't think there's any other 3 days. And also I wasn't wasn't really sure how it would be going. Sometimes I get sick of just pushing, and I don't have the time to go into any detail ever. Always rushing to complete so much.